From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
I'm Jim Lavoulis in for David Gustina. Coming up this week, former New York Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver's corruption conviction has been overturned by a federal appeals court. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on a Quinnipiac poll on Governor Andrew Cuomo's performance, and we'll look at a carbon agreement between the City of Albany and the Nature Conservancy. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The corruption conviction of the former New York State Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver has been overturned on a technicality by a federal appeals court. Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt reports.
Silver's lawyers say they are grateful for the decision, but the U.S. Attorney's Office for New York Southern District says it will retry the case. Until recently, that office was headed by Preet Bharara. He was fired by President Donald Trump earlier this year. The court ruling does not dispute the facts presented in the case. Silver is accused of using his political position to gain over $4 million in illegal kickbacks and bribery payments in schemes involving cancer patients and two major real estate firms. The judges wrote that most people would view those scenarios with distaste, but they ruled that the instructions that the trial judge gave to the Silver jury were incorrect. Susan Lerner, with the government reform group Common Cause, says she's disappointed by the ruling.
This is very clear and outrageous conduct. The public does not elect people with the expectation that they will use their office for personal enrichment. And that's clearly what happened here.
Since Silver was convicted in late 2015, the U.S. Supreme Court has issued a significant ruling on public corruption cases. The High Court in September 2016 overturned the conviction of former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell and his wife, saying that prosecutors had not adequately proved that there was a quid pro quo in the alleged bribery case. That decision rested on how the judge had defined what is an official act when giving instructions to the jury. The federal appeals court said that because of the Supreme Court ruling, the instructions the judge gave in the Silver case to the jury are erroneous, and the jury may have convicted Silver for conduct that is not unlawful, and a properly instructed jury might have reached a different conclusion. Lerner, with Common Cause, says she's encouraged, though, that judges did not rule against the facts presented by the prosecutors, giving hope for a second conviction.
This is a decision that deals with a very technical aspect of the law. It deals only with the jury instructions. And the Second Circuit rejected any objection to the evidence. They said the evidence is strong. I have no doubt that when this case is retried, as the acting U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York has said it will be, that yet another jury of everyday New Yorkers will find that this is not only corrupt but illegal.
The federal appeals court has not yet ruled on the corruption convictions and prison sentences of former state Senate leader Dean Skelos and his son Adam. They have also appealed their convictions. The Skeloses and Silver have all been free on bail pending the outcome of their appeals. The Silver ruling will not affect the federal corruption trials later this year of nine former associates of Governor Cuomo, including Cuomo's former top aide, on bribery and bid rigging. That's because those trials will take place after the Supreme Court's McDonnell ruling. Former Speaker Silver is not the first legislative leader to see his corruption conviction overturned on appeal. Former Senate Leader Joe Bruno, who was convicted on mail and wire fraud in 2009, also won on appeal, once again due to changes in the federal law determined by another U.S. Supreme Court ruling. Bruno was retried. He was eventually acquitted. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
A recent Quinnipiac poll shows Governor Andrew Cuomo's statewide approval rating has fallen to 46% from 52% found in a late March poll. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard spoke with our political observer Alan Chartok about the results.
His main support comes from New York City and its immediate suburbs. A lot of those people who are being asked to respond to polls have to get on the subway and the commuter trains and have to look at the MTA every day. Cuomo really created his own mess because what he did was to say that he was the head of the MTA. He took credit for the Second Avenue subway. But now this is what is now being called by New York commuters the summer of hell. And he is being held responsible. So people are much more aware than they were that it is Cuomo, not de Blasio, who is responsible for the way in which the subways are going. For his part, Cuomo is trying everything in his power to try to get things a little bit sharper for the commuters, a little bit easier for the commuters. He's talking about massive influx of money. There are people who really are raising their eyebrows at that one and saying, well, let's see it. Let's see the proof. He is talking about more control over the MTA. He doesn't need more control. He has it. And I think people aren't buying it anymore. So his numbers are going down because as a manager, he is not producing. And then he has the big onus, which we've been talking about for days and weeks and months, of a trial coming up in which there's going to be a number of people who are very close to Cuomo telling tales of woe and greed. And some of that has got to stick to the governor. Now, there are those people. I was talking to Jimmy Vielkind the other day, who is a very good reporter from Politico, who thinks that maybe he won't run again 2018. Well, I think he is going to run. I think it's his only way of doing this. He'll run for governor, and then he's running for president. He denied the other day that he was running for president. He said, not yet. He's running for president. As I have always said, there's a bear walk in the woods. This guy is running for president if he can.
So do you think, Alan, that this quote-unquote summer of hell for New York City commuters will hurt the governor down the line politically?
Without question, it will. You know, there are some things that you can do a quick fix or a PR campaign about. But when you have subways where the rails are coming apart, where there are accidents happening, where people are stuck in subway cars for over 2 hours in the heat of the summer, it's going to stick. People are going to remember it. Not only that, these problems aren't going to go away in the winter, in the fall, in the winter. What has happened is we have reached that magic moment when it's all coming apart. You were able to cobble it together for a long time. Now it's really bad. And it's going to take substantial work. Anybody who spends any time in New York knows that subways are in disrepair, they are late, that you're jamming people into cars, and people are getting either injured or offended, let's put it that way, by being too close. And by the way, the subway fares are not cheap. So people are going to remember it. Cuomo, of course, doesn't have a lot of friends. He is not a popular character. It's just that he has done some things that, and an attempt, I think, to bring the left closer to him. But he doesn't really have a significant opponent among the Republicans, certainly not in the primary yet. So from a political point of view, he's in fairly good shape. You know, running for president as a sitting governor is much better than running as an ex-governor. I can tell you that now. And so he's running. And for those people who think he's not running, hey, I've been wrong before, but I don't think I'm wrong this time. He's running.
Governor Cuomo has largely avoided commenting on President Trump and the Republicans' administration lately. And he has been critical of Trump in the past, so why hold back now?
Let me put it this way. There's supposed to be a division of responsibility and powers in our United States Constitution. But more and more, the federal government has had a great deal to say about whether states and governors live or die. For example, Trump's attempts to take the Medicaid money away from states, that's killing. Even Republican governors are speaking out against that. So there's a certain amount of discretion that a president has. He can really hurt somebody. So if you lay off, maybe you think, okay, this president will not tweet on me in the morning. I suspect he will. and especially if he's Cuomo is going to really plan to run for president against Trump. So I think his discretion here is, if I shut up, maybe he'll take some pity on me. I doubt that very much.
Legislative Gazette's political observer Alan Chartok speaking with our Lucas Willard. You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm Jim Lavoulis, in for David Gastina. Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan recently joined City Water Department Commissioner Joe Coffey and representatives from the Nature Conservancy to announce a new carbon agreement. It entails the City Water Department and Water Board participating in the Conservancy's Working Woodlands Program, a forest conservation initiative. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
Officials say it will safeguard clean drinking water for the city, protect critical forests, and generate revenue by marketing carbon credits.
An exciting opportunity for the City of Albany to lead with respect to this very important issue that really impacts not only current water quality and our current generation, but future generations. And again, I want to acknowledge that we are joined by the DEC, and we know that Governor Cuomo has also committed the state to the principles of the Paris Climate Accords, and we're pleased that we can be part of a statewide effort to ensure that we are doing all that we can to make our future brighter and to do all that is in our power to preserve the incredible resources that we have.
Stuart Gruskin is Chief Conservation and External Affairs Officer for the Nature Conservancy in New York.
From the Conservancy's perspective, a transaction like this provides an example how smart land protection can happen, where we simultaneously protect nature, serve people, mitigate climate change, and use a private marketplace to achieve those goals. It is truly a win-win for people and nature. So our research shows that there are about 500,000 acres of forest land just in New York State eligible for this type of transaction. And we love this project because fundamentally protecting land in a way that qualifies the owner to receive revenue from the carbon marketplace is scalable. But we need a leader, and that leader in this case is Albany. So there's great potential for this type of initiative to have significant impacts here in New York and globally. The transaction announced today is our very first working woodlands project in New York State, and Albany, appropriately, as the state capital, is leading the way. We're looking forward to duplicating this in other places.
As part of the agreement, the Nature Conservancy will conduct a forest and carbon inventory and prepare a 10-year forest management plan for the Albany Water Board. And it will provide ongoing advice on forest management planning, implementation, and other conservation-related issues, and provide inventory, design, statistical guidance, quantification, and modeling services related to the development of carbon credits for the voluntary carbon market. Coffey places the value of commodity carbon at roughly $8 or $9 a ton, expected to funnel $500,000 to the Water Board over 10 years.
We believe we're kind of well down the road, if you will, to at least getting the first part of some of the documentation prepared. And I know working with the Nature Conservancy and their partners, we've actually started looking at potential markets for carbon.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Hudson Valley Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney recently announced next steps regarding the suspended U.S. Coast Guard proposal for anchorage sites along the Hudson River. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports from the Newburgh waterfront.
The Coast Guard at the end of June suspended the rulemaking process for a proposal of up to 10 anchorage sites between Yonkers and Kingston, and it directed a formal study through a longstanding process called a Ports and Waterways Safety Assessment, or a PASA. Maloney, a Democrat who represents the 18th District, has four principles he wants to ensure are included.
The first is that Hudson Valley voices have to matter. Local voices have to matter.
The second is relying on facts and science.
Number three, the river gets a vote. The river gets a vote. The Hudson River is a national treasure.
The fourth is let the sun shine in, a call for transparency.
You know, over my dead body, is this going to be a backdoor way to bring this proposal back? And over my dead body, is it going to be some way to shut out the local community and railroad through some ill-guided proposal in another form? We have killed the Anchorage's proposal. That's good. We're putting the final nails in the coffin on that. And we're going to go forward on a constructive conversation on public safety, but it has to align with these principles. And we are going to bend and mold the PASA process in whatever way we have to do to get that done.
PASA includes structured meetings of select work groups comprised of waterway users, which are appointed by the Coast Guard, including but not limited to the industry and commercial interests, environmental organizations, academia, recreational groups, and community representatives. Scenic Hudson Director of Public Policy Andy Bicking has a concern about this.
PASA guidance that the Coast Guard uses calls for a 60-40 ratio of river users to waterway users to other stakeholders. That means by nearly two-thirds majority, industrial interests will be driving the PASA process. And if we are not effective in the advocacy and supporting the congressman for these principles, which he has outlined for us today, we're going to be starting from behind. And that is not acceptable to Scenic Hudson.
U.S. Coast Guard spokeswoman Chief Warrant Officer Allison Conroy says the PASA process has been conducted with the 60-40 ratio intact.
There can be wiggle room, and how the people at district who decide on who is going, it's up to them to decide how they're going to choose. But for the most part, it has been set in 60-40 as per our precedented cases.
Republican Beacon Mayor Randy Casal supports Maloney's principles. He wants someone from the Beacon community to be part of the work group.
It don't have to be me, but it needs to be somebody from our community because the river is an important part of our economic development, our recreation, our environment, our quality of life. So we need to have a say on it.
Democratic Assemblyman Frank Scartatos appeared with Maloney.
A suspension to this process does not mean we're out of the woods. And this is a great idea in really holding the feet to the fire when it comes to the whole process and what Sean just described about us being able to have a voice in the process and the river being able to have a voice in the process and that the process is transparent and open.
Again, Maloney.
And I'm very glad that I'm on the Coast Guard Committee of Jurisdiction because it gives me a very important seat at the table in all matters related to the Coast Guard and how they do their important work.
Riverkeeper representatives and Cornwall-on-Hudson Mayor Brendan Coyne also were on hand in support of Maloney's principles. The Coast Guard's Conroy says there are nearly 2 weeks left to be considered for the work groups.
If members of the public wish to be considered for participation in the workshop, they can email their request to hudsonriverpawsa@uscg.mil. by July 21st. And if you want to be included, then please include your name, your contact information, your connection to the waterway, your experience, and your related skills.
She says a person may be recommended to serve on a work group via the same email address. That email address is posted at WAMC.org. The work groups are scheduled to begin in the fall.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
A number of Democrats are lining up to challenge Northern New York's second-term Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. One of the latest to enter the race for the 21st district seat is businesswoman Katie Wilson from the Adirondack Village of Keene. She tells the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley that her campaign is about the future of the people and children across the district.
This isn't about me. This is about, you know, the future of my children that I think about every single day. And, you know, my aging father who is at risk of losing his home and his means of, you know, survival here in the North Country. And I just realized that there are so many people across the North Country facing these same issues. These are, you know, real lives on the line here. And I felt as though it was my duty as a citizen of the North Country and as a, you know, citizen of the country to do whatever I could to help make a difference.
I've heard you discuss health care. Is that your primary issue?
Well, it is a primary issue. You know, like I said, there are real lives on the line here, and it's something that affects every citizen of the North Country. So, you know, I think that we need to do everything we can to ensure that we have healthy families and healthy communities here in order for our area to prosper. But I'm also incredibly concerned about the state of our education systems. And, you know, we have some existing programs in place, such as the BOCES system, that offers, you know, lots of opportunities currently, but they could be strengthened. We are redistributing funds across the country, and we should be making sure that those funds are really enriching our communities. We could be strengthening the vocational training programs and offering farming and nursing and coding and all kinds of programs that would fill roles in our communities and help retain our youth and give them purpose and offer them jobs. So that's another big focus of mine. And also, after talking to, you know, lots of veterans in the area, it's become very clear to me that there is a situation that has been kind of named as the military-civilian divide. And until we address that, it's going to be really hard for us to employ our veterans. They're coming home after receiving some of the best training our country has to offer, and then they're unable to find jobs because there's a lack of communication between the private sector and the military. So, you know, being able to bridge that gap and provide understanding and recruitment for jobs to our veterans is also very important to me.
Katie Wilson, the Warren County Democratic chair has predicted that as many as 9 people could enter the Democratic primary. What strengths do you have in the primary that could then carry over to the race against incumbent Congresswoman Stefanik?
I'm a business owner and I'm a mother, and because of that, I understand what we're facing. So I'm living the issues facing our district every single day, and I think that's my greatest strength. There's a relatability there. There's a way that I can connect to the general public that I bring to the table.
You told the Post Star newspaper that you would be an independent voice for the North Country. Congresswoman Stefanik says she's an independent voice for the North Country. So how would you be different in that regard?
Well, I think that Congresswoman Stefanik's claim of being an independent voice for the North Country has been debunked. You know, she is clearly leading, she's clearly following the requests of the current leadership on the Republican side. So she's listening to Paul Ryan. She's, you know, stating that she's taking all this time to read bills, but she's out whipping votes for Paul Ryan and waiting for his command on how she's allowed to vote up here. So clearly she's not being an independent voice, and how could she be when she doesn't even live here and understand the issues that we're facing?
Do you have the resources to not only challenge the incumbent, but however many primary opponents enter the race?
I do. I do. I've been incredibly supported by my community, and I've had lots of people come out in order to create the space and the support network that I need in order to take this on. So, you know, this is very much a fundraising game. It's going to be, you know, a big, it's going to take a lot. We're expecting to have $300,000 in the bank account by the end of September in order to really show the viability of this campaign.
Congresswoman Elise Stefanik was in Plattsburgh last week. When asked about the growing number of Democrats stepping up to challenge her, she expressed confidence.
I have a very strong record of reaching across the aisle and of bringing results to this district focused on job creation, focused on economic growth, focused on expanding our partnership with Canada. So that's what I'm going to continue doing. I've been through campaigns before. I've been through hard-fought campaigns, and I've won them significantly, and I'm going to be running on my strong record of independent and proven leadership for this district.
3 other Democrats are already looking for the Democratic nomination. Patrick Nelson of Stillwater was the first to announce his candidacy in January. Tedra Cobb of Canton announced earlier this month, and Emily Martz of Saranac Lake announced her campaign on Wednesday.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Congresswoman Elise Stefanik has a standing invitation to appear on WAMC News and its Congressional Corner series. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available by calling 1-800-323-9262. That number is 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1728. Or just listen at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jim Lavoulis in for David Gastina.
statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.